Maine performing arts venues struggle to survive the pandemic. When was the last time you saw a live concert or play? When will you go again? All over the state, all over the nation, the performing arts is one of the hardest hit industries during this pandemic. Most venues have been shuttered temporarily. Portland's Port City Music Hall has been closed for good. And artists are struggling too. According to the National Endowment for the Arts, this past summer, the unemployment rates for actors and dancers was over 50%. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with several Maine performing arts organizations about how they've survived the past year and what they're planning for 2021. Are you eager to see a live show again? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. This is Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. Because of this pandemic, many performing arts venues have had to shut down either permanently or temporarily, and the artists that perform in them continue to struggle. Today, we find out how performing arts venues are staying afloat and what audiences can expect in this new year. My guests, Chris Granis, who is Executive Director of the Eastport Arts Center, and Kelsey Halliday-Johnson, Executive Director of Space Gallery in Portland. We invite your questions and comments. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, Kelsey, Chris. I'm sure you all are very happy that we're in a new year with vaccines actually a reality. Kelsey, tell me what the year has been like for the Space Gallery and also for the performing artists who have come there.
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much, and Happy New Year, Jennifer. It has been a roller coaster, and we've been in a mode of constantly adapting to the science, what's taking place in our communities, how our communities are responding. We shut our doors on March 13th and have been always trying to figure out and assess how we can best help artists, not just in Portland, but across the state. So as soon as we shut our doors, we pitched to the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts to offer artist relief grants. And most recently, right before we left for the holidays, we distributed our musician relief grants across the state, which was 71 $1,000 grants to emerging and established musicians of all genres and quite a big geographical range. So we've been trying to stand by artists. We've been trying to figure out how to best adapt to Zoom and also Zoom fatigue, and also figure out ways to make intimate cultural space online, which has been a new challenge, but also one that I think a lot of artists have risen to the occasion of.
Chris, what about up at Eastport? What have you been doing?
Well, in Eastport, at the Eastport Arts Center, we're a group of six constituents who each have their own art form. So they each have, and their volunteers have each created ways to share their passions with the community still via Zoom, via videos, and getting together. Well, for instance, the dancers have put together a set list, and they all get together in their own homes and dance to the set list. And musicians have shared their rehearsals and their performances of their pieces that they've been working on, and basically just trying to stay afloat.
Chris, let me ask you this, and I'll ask you the same question, Kelsey. Was there ever any question that you wouldn't be able to survive this, that the Eastport Arts Center might not survive the pandemic?
No, I don't think there ever was a thought that way. It was always a big just question of how are we going to ride this one.
Okay, and Kelsey, what about space?
Yeah, space has been in a really good position. We're lucky that we're not any one thing. We're an art gallery, we're a laboratory, we're a music venue, we're a film theater. And a few years ago, our board led a campaign to buy our building. So we have a 31 artist studios upstairs that are actively renting our physical space. And so we've never been at risk, but the initial PPP loan was a big kind of savior moment for us, because ultimately, I also want to keep the creatives on my staff employed, and that has been, you know, the biggest challenge is how do you maintain your role as a small employer and do things ethically in a year that has been tremendously challenging to people that want to keep their community together.
Yes. Right. And Chris, you're agreeing with that.
Yes, we were able to keep all our staff employed, our three part-time staff.
Wonderful. Kelsey, I understand the latest stimulus has special money for performing arts venues. Do you think that you will get any of that, and how much will it help?
That's a really great question. Our music programmer, Peter McLaughlin, and I, and also there's a large coalition of venues here in Portland that are asking those questions and reading the bill really carefully. We are not just a venue, so there is actually a big question mark tied to that. But there will be a second round of PPP as well. But, you know, it's an interesting ethical thing that we keep coming up against, where there's all these relief efforts and they kind of keep wanting to put you into a teeny tiny box. And if you're saying, I'm trying to be flexible and adapt to keep offering something to my community and keep our mission vibrant, that somehow they want you to be at the point of total destitution when you ask. So we're going to look into it, and we're hopeful, but we're not strictly a venue. So there may in fact be a technicality that we can't apply, which is honestly a little bit frustrating. So
too early to know, but you're trying to be very cautious with your optimism.
Yes.
Chris, what about you?
Yes, this for the same reasons. I'm skeptical whether we apply.
Okay. Kelsey, I want to ask about the greater arts community in Portland. Spaces is one of many performing arts venues. It's part of what makes Portland such an attractive city to so many people. Have the performing arts venues found ways to work together, support each other in the last year?
Yeah, I've always been buoyed about that for the entire time I've been in Maine, how much cross-pollination and collaboration there is between organizations here that have such different winter versus summer seasons, or just, you know, trying to figure out what our role is in the changing face of Portland. But there has been a ton of calls, different organizations organizing different support groups for executive directors or staff. The music community has had just a tremendous amount of different supporters who have been pulling people together. I specifically want to thank Scott, who is we made the Maine Music Coalition together, and Lauren from the State Theater, and also, you know, working as a group to bring together advocacy efforts to Senator King and Senator Collins' offices, and how we as a field want to say what we need to our elected officials.
Let me stop you right there and ask you, what is the Maine Music Collective, for people who don't know?
So that was an initiative. They're still raising money. There was an amazing thing called Save Our Stages that took place at the State Theater, and they're trying to raise money for a coalition of the smaller venues in town, the Aphodian, Blue, St. Lawrence Theater, Mayo Street Arts. I apologize if I'm forgetting people on the fly, but thinking about those other organizations that have struggled to fall through, you know, or have fallen through the cracks, Portland House of Music. And so, you know, both One Longfellow and Portland House of Music did really amazing fundraising efforts on their own behalf to meet their budget, because they were so reliant on earned income. And I'm really just incredibly buoyed by the amount of community support when those organizations have kind of put up a flag and asked for community support.
And Chris, let me ask you about the Down East community. Have people been coming forward to support you and help you stay open?
Oh, yes. They're very, very supportive. We've gotten donors this year that have never donated, although they've been longtime supporters coming through our doors. They just hadn't made that step to donate. And this year, we have gotten several donations that way, and bigger ones because they understand our plight.
And Chris, I'm imagining that this has sort of, I don't know what the right word, jolted people into thinking deeply about what your organization means to your community.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I really get that feeling, and we've had lots of nice stories from community people, from people a little further away that can take part because a lot of our offerings are on Zoom or online, and they aren't here, and they can't get out as much as they used to. So it's been a good experience in that way.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Zoom, because sort of the magic of both of your places and others that will call in during the program is the experience of seeing a performance together with other people. Zoom is not that, even though people are also watching, they're not experiencing each other's laughter or sorrow or just general energy. Has there been a little bit, Kelsey, of wow, this Zoom event did great, and that one was okay, and then now, wow, people aren't tuning in anymore.
Well, we actually kind of deliberately slowed our Zoom programming over the summer so that because we knew people were going to want to be outside and be connected in the ways that they could be. I was very lucky to see some music outside this summer on Peaks Island at the Lions Club, and co-organized by Dimensions in Jazz and our music programmer, Peter McLaughlin, and at Lady Lamb's house, which was very exciting in her backyard. She did a music series called Live from the Hive. But the Zoom fatigue is very real, but I think people are going to, again, turn back to it with the winter time. We've also done some things on Instagram Live, and while I have questions about the Facebook empire, the intimacy of that and being able to see who's in the room with you, we were calling them house shows, and we were doing them live from musicians' houses. And there was a very specific and certain magic about that. Almost all of our Zoom programming, from my perspective, has been a success. I mean, it's quality over quantity, and, you know, some events are for hundreds of people, and some are really meant to be an intimate discussion with 20, 30 people in the room. But it's a very different dynamic of how you can, like, mingle and interact. You can't have the kind of after-show hangout with the people you run into at an event, and I miss that, and we're going to try our hardest to bring it back as soon as it's safe.
Right. And Chris, you had mentioned that people farther away, do you think that even when we're back to normal, and I'm using air quotes here, that you might continue Zoom events so that you can reach people who aren't right down the street?
We were in the process of working towards simulcasting some of our events and recording them anyway. And so when this happened, it just spurred us on big time into learning that technology and finding the volunteers we need and the knowledge we need to do that. So, yes, we will continue a lot of what we're doing.
Great. Well, joining us now, Amy Petrin, who is Executive and Artistic Director of Portland Ovations. Thanks for calling in, Amy.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
So tell me about what Portland Ovations has been doing or not doing to survive during the pandemic.
Well, I would just echo a lot of what Kelsey and Chris were just saying. The whole dynamic of what we're doing has changed, and obviously working digitally and figuring out the ways to do those digital gatherings so that they do feel personal, that you do have that mingle opportunity, whatever that might be, that you can have a conversation, that it's actually live, just remote, and not just trying not to focus just on the digital as a screening opportunity, but to really use that as a moment to then come together and have a live conversation or a live interaction with artists. And that's been really key. And exactly what Kelsey said, it's quality, not quantity. I mean, we went from going to, you know, 40 plus stage events a year to now doing, you know, probably a dozen conversations and gatherings and events. And it's, each one of them is unique and has its own personality. And likewise, we are seeing the benefits of it, not in twofold, both going deeper into Maine in terms of reaching folks in rural Maine that we may not otherwise reach with our live performances, and also national and international. We're having audiences that are coming to us from all over the world. So it's exciting and challenging.
Amy, have you had to lay off anybody?
We did have a furlough, one-person furlough that we brought back, and we had a couple of folks leave because they got some really great jobs, and we froze those positions. So we were a staff of 8, and we are now 5. So we are lean and mean.
And let me ask you about the, I was asking Chris and Kelsey about the federal stimulus money. Do you have any sense of if that's going to be something that can help Portland Ovations?
Our sense from the initial analysis, and I'm so grateful I have some board members who do this kind of analysis, and so they're helping me out. But so far, what we're seeing is that there will be an opportunity for us to apply to it. We seem to meet all of the eligibilities standards, so or criteria. So we are hopeful that we will be able to apply both for the second round of payroll protection as well as the SOS. And I think the thing that I just keep wanting to remind people is that these monies are what's going to help all of these organizations stay alive through until we can have more revenue again. It's not so that we can put on shows and do all that. It's just to keep our employees employed and keep the programming that we do, which a lot of it is much more, at this point, community-based and really based on what we can do to serve the community and less about, you know, quote-unquote, putting on shows. So this money is vital to keep us going.
Amy, before I let you go, I want to ask you, and of course the others, we haven't even talked about the fact that it's a new year. People are getting vaccinated, but we don't know how many vaccines will come out, how quickly. We don't know when some of these regulations will be lifted. Amy, how are you planning for this coming year?
Well, first I get my crystal ball out, and then...
I want one of those.
Yeah, well, don't we all need them? I think I'm willing to share. I also have a crazy eight ball. I think it's about as useful. It's interesting. I was just talking to a colleague yesterday, and we were saying how the last couple of months we all knew what was going to happen. We knew we were going to be virtual. We knew we were going to be remote. We knew we were going to be digital. And now with the new year and the hope of the vaccine, it's put us back into that place of running scenarios on the what ifs, how long, how many, when. And so that's that place we're in right now, because there's a lot of excitement, obviously, for folks to think that we're going to be able to come back. And there's also a lot of just really careful thinking about what that really is going to look like, because we know, or we think we know at least, that we won't come back 100%, you know, Portland Ovations. We won't be filling Merrill Auditorium this fall, most likely.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. The kind of people that you book, national and international acts, are the kind of people that need to be booked a year or two in advance, in usual times, but they're not working right now either. So do you believe that when things change, they'll be able to change more quickly than they, you know, than the old way of booking shows?
Well, I think that the way we work and the way we program and plan has definitely changed. I think we're going to be working on a much shorter timeline for a long time. Mm-hmm. The good news is most of the things that we would want to do in 21, 22, we actually planned for 2 years ago. So the planning's been done. We're just waiting to do it and when it's safe to do it. So I feel good about that. But I would say that it's going to change, I think, for all of us, how we plan. I think about for someone like Ovations, you know, we put out a big season brochure in May. Well, we might not do that in the future, and maybe never again. It may be that we only work on a 3 to 6 month window because that's what makes sense. And I think that the other thing for us as presenters at Ovations is a lot of the artists that we present are artists, like you say, who are coming nationally and internationally, and just the ability to travel is still going to be limited. So part of what I'm looking at, going back to what will we keep and what will we get rid of, is holding on to some of the digital pieces for some of our international programming, because that might be the only way we can do international programs in the next year.
So well, really, Amy Petrin, yeah, thank you so much for calling in. Amy's the Executive and Artistic Director of Portland Ovations. We do need to go to a break when we come back. Chris and Kelsey, I want to talk to you about the future, and we'll also hear from other arts organizations in Maine. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
When Wendy Wood tried to start a 6 a.m. workout routine, She dreaded it. So she thought of a creative solution.
I actually slept in my running clothes because it made it easier to then get up and just get out the door.
How our habits form and ways to take control of them, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
And you can join us for Hidden Brain this evening at 10 o'clock. Did you know, in addition to being free over the air, Maine Public Television is now streaming live at mainepublic.org. You can enjoy all your favorite PBS and Maine Public Television programs and even discover new ones throughout the day. Check it out at mainepublic.org/mptv. If you're without internet, you can still access Maine Public's 4 television stations over the air with an HDTV antenna. To learn more about Maine Public Television over the air and for helpful information on choosing your antenna, visit mainepublic.org. Free access to Maine Public Television is made possible through the support of our members. Consider becoming a member today to help us deliver this wonderful service to all of Maine. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about the impact of the pandemic on the performing arts in Maine and what's being done to reach audiences. My guest, Kelsey Halliday Johnson, who is Executive Director of Space Gallery, and Chris Granis, Executive Director of the Eastport Arts Center. Share your comments or questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now, Brian Hinrich is... Brian, did I pronounce your last name right?
It's Brian Hinrich. Thanks so much, Jennifer.
Great. Yeah, Executive Director of the Bangor Symphony Orchestra. Thank you for calling in today. Brian, what has the Bangor Symphony Orchestra been doing for the last 10 months?
Well, like everyone else, adapting has been key to our survival and staying connected with our community. We really have been adapting from the start of the pandemic. To date, we have released over 25 free videos on our Facebook page and YouTube channel, a mix of performance-based and educational content. One highlight was a virtual performance of Lucas Richmond's Hope Begins with Truth, as well as a full string quartet concert featuring music from our founding year, 1896, and most recently a holiday series. Our goal with this effort has been to really engage our musicians as well as our audiences alike to keep everyone connected and remind our community that we're still here. And right now, throughout the winter and spring, we're entering a period of offering ticketed digital performances for the first time. So from February to June, we will be presenting 5 classical concerts streaming online on our new digital concert home, watch.bangorsymphony.org. We'll be gathering small ensembles, 15 to 30 musicians, with really extensive safety protocols in place, including universal COVID testing, and filming these performances with some really exciting repertoire that's been born out of this new smaller scale format. The Portland Symphony started doing this earlier in the fall, and I really think, you know, a lot of the organizations on the phone and throughout the state have been leading the way. You know, it's our 125th season, so we've felt strongly about fulfilling our mission safely as we can throughout the pandemic. But as others have said, you know, the pivot to digital comes with a lot of unknowns, both financial unknowns and the question of how long this will go on and whether this is the start of something that will be with us for many years to come.
Brian, I understand Bangor Symphony Orchestra, many of their performers also have other jobs. Have most of your players been able to make it through this pandemic?
It's been a real mix and a real concern. You're right. We have many members of the orchestra who are otherwise employed as music teachers or professors or some in fields outside of music, but the core of our ensemble are professional gigging musicians who play in the Bangor Symphony as well as other orchestras with churches, et cetera, throughout the Northeast. And it's those performing artists in particular that have really suffered greatly throughout the pandemic. And that is really one reason that we feel so strongly about trying to create this new content and employ mm-hmm. our players is to keep them engaged and to, you know, we have a number of younger members of the orchestra who, you know, I worry about the next generation of professional performing artists if they can't see a viable financial path forward in the field. So that's
sure.
definitely a major concern.
Sure. Brian, what are your hopes for 2021?
Oh, certainly widespread vaccination is the number one hope. But, you know, going forward with our digital efforts, I hope we can reach new people. I hope we can leave this pandemic feeling a greater sense of connection to our community and to our musicians and emerge from this stronger.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Brian Hinrichs with the Bangor Symphony Orchestra. We'll go to Faye, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Faye. Go ahead.
Hi. So I started an immersive venue this past year. And of course, this is not the year to start an immersive venue at all. But one of the things that really helped us was we created an online portal with 360 video, which could be experienced in virtual reality. And part of that, we became a beta tester for the startup here in Portland called DriftSpace. And it basically allows you to create virtual reality worlds for people who have an Oculus or other type of virtual reality headset. I was curious how music venues might be looking towards that in the future.
Oh, interesting. So, Faye, before I talk about virtual reality, I have to ask you, tell us what an immersive experience is when we're talking about the performing arts.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, an immersive venue is anything that your dreams could really come up with. It can be anything from performance-based to sculptural-based, music-based. It's basically using all five senses to create an environment that is you can immerse yourself into. So, you know, in having a, how do I explain it? having a music venue, for example, that would also have dancers throughout the space, dressed in costume, there might be a theme to it, as well as utilizing creative structures throughout the entire space to really create, like, you're stepping into a world, so to speak.
And are you saying that you would like to be able to incorporate virtual reality, or you found a way to do so already?
We have so already. So each exhibit that we did this past year, we did a 360 video on. So you can experience it through YouTube as well as on your desktop or your phone. But you can also put on a virtual reality headset. And with the sound and the movement through the video, through the 360 video, you feel as if you're standing within the space. And the really cool thing that I see that I've been seeing a lot of concerts kind of go to this, where you can create your own person, your own avatar, and go into a concert in virtual reality space and be as if you're in the crowd. You can dance, you can move, you can do all these kind of things. You can have little break-offs where you go and hang out with your friends, you know, in a little lounge area to the side of the stage. There's just so much amazing possibility, and I wasn't sure if other venues were looking towards that right now.
Yeah. Kelsey, a space gallery look toward VR?
Yeah, we've made some artist grants in virtual reality that have primarily revolved around 360 documentary storytelling. I've been really inspired, actually, by the Camden International Film Festival and their Storyforms program that they put on every year, which is a virtual reality-specific curated platform about just like both the expanded field of like new technologies as well as just, you know, kind of stories for Oculus. I do get concerned about the accessibility of it and like how, you know, you can't stay in those things for I find it hard to stay in those things for too long, but I do think it's exciting. I mean, there's a certain thing about video streaming that for us has been really great because it is accessible to more people, but there's also a lot of people that don't have access to this technology, too. So it's like a two-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, you know, I like the idea of concerts being able to be, I mean, I hope that it will make an interest in more global contemporary music if you can see performances happening elsewhere in the globe. But inherently, I want to feel the bass in my chest, so I'm looking forward to maybe having a slight bit of tinnitus from a concert being too loud in the near future.
Chris, anything to add to that?
Me too. Waiting for that bass in the chest feel. The virtual reality is very intriguing, and I'm going to look into that.
All right, Faye, thank you so much for your call and good luck to you. Calling in now, Bradford Kenny, who is Executive Artistic Director of the Ogunquit Playhouse. Thanks for joining us, Bradford.
Hey there. Thanks for having us and Happy New Year, everyone.
You too. I think of the Ogunquit Playhouse as a summer playhouse. What would you normally be doing this time of year?
Well, we, you know, our history is 89, we're 89 years old this year. And so we used to be a summer stock theater for about 10 weeks, but we now produce and perform about 30 weeks through Maine, New Hampshire, and also in New York. So January for us is casting. We would be normally in New York. We would launch next week with our big open union calls because the Ogunquit Playhouse self-produces all these big shows individually and just for our stage, whether they transfer or not. So January and February is casting and design. You know, we'll be working very closely with the set designers for some of these world premieres and putting together.
What are you doing this year?
Well, we have gone out. We have a subscription series that we may have to go outside with. You know, we're in a unique position, I think, certainly like some of the other performing arts, that we really need people to be able to sit side by side of all ages, you know, with audience capacities up to about 80% until we're truly sustainable. So we've been doing a lot of fundraising. We've had some success. We participated closely in the Save Our Stages program, and that just passed and was put into law. And so beyond that, we have to stay relevant. We're doing a little bit of streaming, and we've had some success. We did also, in 2020, we did a little bit of socially distanced concerts. We were able to put about 50 people because that was the cap at that point for performance venues. We did it all summer long. It sold out, which was great. But to give you a sense of what that is, even, you know, a 50-person concert for us, the entire season of that didn't even make one-third of a normal week of the Ogunquit Playhouse. So it's not sustainable. We really, you know, we need seniors and kids and middle-aged people to be able to sit side by side at 70 to 80% occupancy until certainly, you know, Maine's performing arts venues, Ogunquit Playhouse up in Penobscot, Penobscot Theater up in Bangor, Portland Stage, Maine State Music Theater. We're all not going to make it until, you know, you can exactly what you'd picture, those senior matinees and then all the kids programs and educational, you know, social service programs. We're all doing the social distancing, and like for the Ogunquit Playhouse itself, it's about 700 seats. If you social distance that, you're down to less than 150 seats.
Well, let me ask you the big question, since you are so tied in not only with Southern Maine, but also New York City and the rest of the theater world. What is your feeling about the future of the performing arts? Will performing arts come roaring back, or do you think that this is a really big cultural hit?
I think there's going to be great silver linings coming from this, and I think streaming is one of them. Will we come roaring back? Absolutely. People are chomping at the bit. They really are. And it's a big range. Even the senior citizen audience and the family audiences, they want to be back. We've come out with a measured indoor or outdoor version of in-person, socially distanced, and we've renewed like 80% of our normal subscription base that have already bought tickets on faith for 2021. And also, you know, for the industry nationally, it's a good point. Intellectual property, the authors, the movie studios that allow us to premiere their works on stage as musicals, they're all adapting, you know, not rapid fire quickly, but they've adapted. And so they're allowing streaming rights for their shows. It's going to be a combination, I think, for 21 of live and virtual. And the virtual is a way that we've certainly stayed connected, but it is not, again, sustainable. And I think people, I heard, you know, your last group saying they want to feel the bass, and that is there, that desire to congregate. That is what a lot of the theater arts are. It's not just about the pretty pictures or anything. It's about public congregation, the need to get together. You have seniors that really have major loneliness issues, and this is the way they break that barrier and congregate and volunteer, all these different tiers of what the performing arts mean. They are going to come back. They'll have some silver linings. But they'll be, I think 21 is going to be a journey getting us through it. And you know, it's going to be about sustaining the staff. You know, these are real jobs. And they are, we have a lot of union members. Most of the people that work full time in our front of house, like greeting the guests, but also backstage, they all have, you know, bachelor and master's degrees in the arts. They've got mortgages and families to feed. And it's been a real journey of learning how to even tell that story after the blow first hits, that this is the group, the performing arts, is going to be the last to come back because they can't be sustainable. We can't, we can go outside and we will. We've got to be relevant. We still have to reach these seniors, these middle-aged folks, these kids, and do the mix of in-person and virtual. But it's going to be about probably 22. What we're watching is as the vaccine is starting to roll out this year, it's going to start slower because in theory we could be outside in the spring and we will be. We'll have a cabaret kind of thing and then we'll have a version of what you all know is the Algonquin Playhouse main stage, at least outdoor. But that's going to pass government regulations. It's got to be safe. We'll be working with the Maine CDC. Again, these performance unions are being very, very strict. They want to make sure their audiences are protected. We want to make sure, you know, yes, the actors are protected, but the audience members are. And so we're up to the task. The arts are definitely up to the task.
Yeah. Well, Bradford, I so appreciate you calling in and being part of our conversation today. Bradford Kenny is with the Algonquin Playhouse. Good luck to you. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood's Argentine Red Shrimp, caught in the wild and available raw, peeled, and ready to cook in the freezer at your local Hannaford. Bull Moose, offering an option of curbside pickup on books, movies, CDs, or video games. Curbside pickup is available at checkout at bullmoose.com. And Maine Community Foundation, saluting frontline workers, nonprofit organizations, and donors for their strength and support.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. The Trump administration has carried out more federal executions than any other president in modern history. Activist and Catholic nun Sister Helen Prejean has been speaking with inmates on federal death row and trying to save their lives. She talks with us about her fight to abolish the death penalty next time on Here and Now.
Join us for Here and Now coming up after Maine Calling at noon.
Voter turnout this fall was the highest in over a century on both sides. So what will it take to unify the country? This is Brian Lehrer from WNYC. Join me, my guests, and listeners from around the country for a live call-in special, the day Congress counts the electoral votes and the day after Georgia's two Senate runoff elections. America, are we ready to reconcile?
And join us for that live call-in program tomorrow evening beginning at 8 p.m.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on our program, the outlook for the performing arts during these challenging times. Joining me, Chris Granis with the Eastport Arts Center and Kelsey Halliday Johnson with Space Gallery. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to David calling from Freeport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much for doing this production today on Maine Calling. This has been a really inspiring and helpful conversation to listen to, and I appreciate the opportunity to join in. I'm on the board of the Arts and Cultural Alliance of Freeport, and we are an organization that supports the arts in Greater Freeport. And in addition, have a major project that we started this year. Talk about timing. We started renovating a historic church in Freeport into both a performing arts center and a gallery. And our fundraising was going really well until about the middle of March. And we completely stopped. The businesses in Freeport have been very supportive, but they were really uncertain what was going to happen to them. We're fortunate that things are beginning to pick up again. We have had a tremendous amount of support from the community, but we have a major undertaking in the process. And so we are continuing as a nonprofit organization, and we're trying to support the arts. We have been doing a number of pop-up galleries for our visual artists, and we've been doing we did an outdoor concert this summer. We continue to do what we called concerts from the couch. and other performances and support other nonprofits and for-profits like Cadenza and Freeport Players have been doing productions on Facebook and on Zoom. So it's been an interesting challenge, and we still have not opened. In fact, we're in the process still of renovating because we made major changes in our plans, including a massive change in the ventilation system in order that once we do open, we'll be more safe for people to be able to come and attend. And,
David, thank you for calling, and good luck to your organization, and thanks for bringing up that point. David calling in from Freeport, the Arts and Cultural Alliance of Freeport. Kelsey, are you thinking about ventilation differently?
This is upstairs in our studio building right now. I mean, we are in a historic landmark building on Congress Street in downtown Portland. From 1907, and so we have plenty of building projects that we would like to do, and ventilation suddenly was put to the top of that list this year. How this affects working architecture in our day-to-day lives is a huge impact and perhaps a whole other conversation. And I just wanted to highlight something that Brian said that I keep thinking about and wrote down and underlined, which was that Hope Begins with Truth piece that they started the Banger Symphony Orchestra started their season off with. And I feel like maybe that's missing from this conversation, too, is that not only are we trying to adapt our architecture, our safety guidelines, I mean, we're going to have so much stuff to do before we actually reopen to the public, but that the public is also changing this year. You know, there's been a huge surgence in conversation about racial and social justice, and also the arts and culture need to be a site to process and provide catharsis for that too. So really everything's changing all around us, from ventilation to the heart and soul of our programs.
Chris?
Yes, our workshops for next year are going to focus on reestablishing peace and feelings of goodness in ourselves, and hopefully move forward.
Joining us now, Kay Carina, who is board president of Portland Youth Dance. Kay, thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Tell us about Portland Youth Dance and the role it plays in the community.
Yes. So Portland Youth Dance, we are a small nonprofit company in the Portland area. We are housed in the amazing Casco Bay Movers, and we have the really awesome opportunity to bring the gift of dance to kids in and around the Portland and greater Portland area. And it's been such an honor and such a pleasure to be a part of this.
Tell me what you've done throughout the pandemic.
Yeah, so our amazing, amazing directors, artistic directors, have done such an incredible job. At the drop of really everything, they pivoted to online to provide online dance classes and dance opportunities for our dancers who are in our company, as well as getting help from some of our other community members, such as Collective Motion, again, Casco Bay Movers, to put on a summer show at Saco Drive-In to celebrate really the gift of getting the opportunity to dance and getting the opportunity to share that dance with the community. It's been an absolute pleasure to see all of the students really showing, you know, like the appreciation for getting to express themselves and what their truest expression is, which is dance. But again, it's been so hard in this climate because, of course, the biggest thing that we are really struggling with is the resources and being able to continue to be a part of the community with a huge lack of resources as it comes to, you know, funding opportunities and things like that, and really trying to navigate that has been our largest struggle. And that's why our annual appeal really and truly, we are asking our community to help us continue to give this gift as much as we humanly can.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Kay Carina, who is board president of Portland Youth Dance. We'll go up to East Blue Hill and Veronica. Hi, Veronica. Go ahead.
Yes, hi there. I'm on the board at the New Surrey Theatre in Blue Hill. We are a 100-seat theatre in the Town Hall in Blue Hill, and we are getting through the pandemic very successfully, at least artistically. We have managed to do, I think it's now 6 productions using Zoom, each one becomes more interesting than the other as we get more sort of facile in how you can be really interesting. And our donor support has been terrific. And one of the pluses about being on Zoom is that we've expanded our reach. And we're now having audience members from across the state and beyond, which is all very exciting. It's not as wonderful as live theater, but it we're holding it together and having a good time doing it.
Well, Veronica, thank you for calling in and sharing that experience. And Chris, this is similar to what you have found. You have found people outside of your immediate community tapping into your programming, right?
Yes, yes. And we are also a 100-seat theater, so a lot smaller than your other guests have been. And, yes, it's been great.
Well, Veronica, thank you so much for calling in. We'll go to Carlos calling from Denmark. Hi, Carlos. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? And I appreciate the show. What I wanted to share was that as a singer-songwriter, I'm really anticipating a difference, a change, sort of an evolution in the aesthetics of what people expect to see when they go to a restaurant or a venue that has live music. And in my particular case, I have a little bit of a problem with what I call the fast food plastic shield approach, because it's not really effective for protecting the singer or the audience.
You don't like a big plexiglass shield in front of you?
I do not. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to develop a system. I'm calling it a guardian system, and I'm working with a stage manager that has handled different kinds of fabrics that are semi-permeable for light but can be used as a additional veil. So that when people go to a restaurant, they will see someone backlit behind sort of a veil system. And I'm excited about the possibilities, but I think that's going to be a pretty semi-permanent change for the aesthetics of what we expect to see.
Carlos, I so appreciate you calling in. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay because I have friends. I moved out from San Diego a few years back, and I have lots of friends in Maine and in on the West Coast that are willing to tune in to a virtual show once in a while. And the places like the Denmark Arts Center and the Hiram Arts Center, they've been very, very kind about giving us the space to do virtual shows. It's just a matter of getting used to the technology of it, which I'm not great at, but they're very helpful. So I'm just getting by.
I appreciate you calling in. Good luck to you. Let's hope that you're back performing in live venues sooner than we all expect. We have an email from poet Richard Blanco here, and Richard Blanco is going to be on our program tomorrow. He writes, Tom Davis, a retired minister of music, created a musical score for my poem, Declaration of Interdependence, with a trio of musicians who play jazz, funk, and hip-hop compositions. It was such a joy and honor to hear 30 local voices, accompanied by a string quartet from the Portland Symphony Orchestra, with collaborating musicians on the piano, Native American drum, flute, and keyboard, perform this poem as a song in our little town of Bethel. The poem was written in 2018 to nurture our sense of unity, compassion, and the humanity that binds us. Kelsey, an example of the creativity bubbling up during this pandemic.
Yes, we were actually really lucky with Maine Writers and Publishers Association to welcome Richard Blanco to launch his most recent publication here at Space. And I think, we've always had a fierce commitment to social justice that's evolving as the words of social justice change. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see a more diverse field. And a lot of organizations are being challenged to change the amount, what kind of arts they're presenting, the representation of artists of color. And that's only going to benefit the kind of rich cultural fabric that's here in Maine already.
All right. And going to another email here from Benjamin, Resilience in Place, Tempo Arts public art theme for its 2020 installation, Gathering Stones, by Maine artist Jesse Salisbury, explores in response to challenges posed by imminent changes in our natural and social environments. Active public participation is crucial to our process and to Tempo Art's vision. Plus, it's easy to wear a mask and meet people outdoors in public spaces that prompts social equity. Tempo Art has produced a short film which gives viewers a closer look at Gathering Stones and includes an interview with a sculptor, as well reactions from observers. Another creative solution. And Megan on Facebook writes, Barents Whitfield and the Savages was my last best live show in early February. I got to watch Maine's Gamma Gucci's at online Gonerfest this summer. We need rock and roll. I'm wearing a mask and staying at home as much as possible, but cannot wait for a good small live show. When is it safe to have them again? And Chris, nobody knows the answer to that, right?
No, nobody does. We're hoping to do a couple outside performances this summer, and we'll check that out.
When do you think you'll start with the outside? What qualifies as summer for outdoor performances, Chris?
I'd say not until June, probably.
Okay. And what about you, Kelsey? Is Space looking at any outdoor performances?
Yeah, so this summer we didn't actually do, well, we did some performance art and movement practices outside with a project called Recite, led by my colleague Leah Wilson, with the assistance of Meg Hahn and Carolyn Wachnicki. And we are looking at a music commissioning program with our music programmer, Peter McLaughlin, who will commission things for outdoor performances in summer 2021. And we're also trying to figure out how to activate, you know, outdoor public art that's safe for everybody on their own terms. But yeah, the vaccination, I mean, rate needs to accelerate quite rapidly. And then on top of that, we really want to ask for good state and national leadership about how to reopen venues safely. I mean, I have such solidarity with restaurant workers who have been just doing it on their own without, you know, just trying to figure out how to make their space and their architecture work for their staff and our frontline staff, whether they're selling concessions or taking tickets. We will do everything we can to make sure that we open at an appropriately safe time and have, you know, a solution in place for their health and well-being.
Well, we're also hopeful for both of your organizations and others in this new year. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Kelsey Halliday-Johnson, Executive Director of Space Gallery in Portland, and Chris Granis, Executive Director of the Eastport Art Center. Today's sound engineer was John Keimel. The program will be rebroadcast tonight at 7. Visit MaineCalling.org for more information about our programs and to sign up for our podcast. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.